Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. And welcome to Feed Your Head. I'm Ruth Anna Marchefield, and I am so happy tonight to have Daniel James Stampfly as my guest. Hello, Dan.
Hello.
We're going to talk about body modification and suspension. And, you know, I've been fascinated by this for a long time because I just plain, you know, like most people I know, don't or didn't understand it. And then my brother started getting into some of this, and it's like, okay, I was learning a little bit more from him. And a little bit over a year ago, I was at a festival, and I saw this beautiful, it was like a dance, like a ballet, suspension. And I then started to really get the feel of the beauty in this. And so when we found each other, it's like, oh man, I really want to have him on. Let's have a little background. You are an ordained minister.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, and you've dedicated your life actually to helping people in this, what do I, this area and this lifestyle?
This community. I like to call it a community because, I mean, we're all...
It is.
We're all part of the same tribe, although we all live all over the world.
Yeah. And so you're helping people just find each other, find themselves, and be more comfortable.
Exactly. And to feel more comfortable with who they are and turn their feelings and visions into something that's artistic and something that's beautiful versus something that's secretive and destructive.
Right, and something to be ashamed of.
Exactly.
So you have been doing different kinds of modifications and suspension for over 20 years, right?
Yes.
How did you get started?
To be honest, I was a chef working in a hotel, and I befriended a local body piercer, and I began hanging out at the tattoo shop. And it just became something I ended up doing on a daily basis, and I ended up with an apprenticeship without even realizing that I acquired it. And my friend had gotten hurt, and he needed me to step in and pierce, and next thing you know, I mean, there I was piercing, and I just kind of took off like a,
wow,
a fish in water. And it really changed my life. You know, I went from being this West Coast kid who had a lot of anger and a kind of like a prison-style lifestyle growing up, in that type of a community, and came to somewhere where I learned that life is beautiful and people are beautiful, and just being able to share information and enlighten people and bring them into my culture. That was the biggest thing that brought me into it was people. Me learning my art in life was people and making people feel beautiful every day, and sometimes 16, 20 or 40 times a day, touching lives on a daily basis. I just really had realizations of what I do to people's lives on a daily basis, that when they meet me, they take me with them. I become this new friend that they introduced all of their friends. And knowing this, when I talk to each individual, knowing that I've touched their life and I've become their friend, they're going to take me with them, having that realization helps me treat people, I guess, a lot better than most people would. Versus coming into a tattoo shop and feeling uncomfortable, I thrived on making them feel comfortable and making them feel a part of it and trying to educate them so they could know the things that I knew, so they weren't just somebody on the street with a tattoo or a modification, but they understood it, where it came from and why it was used, and for them to kind of search themselves and find out what they want and where they want to go with their life, you know?
Right. You take it another a step further, or more than one step, actually, further. So... That's very commendable. I'm just I'm fascinated by the whole community, like you were saying. You do tattooing and piercing.
I'm a body piercer, yeah, and a suspension artist. I don't do tattooing. I could. I'm an artist, but I prefer not to squint on somebody's bodies for 8 to 10 hours at a time.
Oh, okay.
But I do work in that community. I work in a tattoo shop. I work in several tattoo shops. So, again, part of the reason I do it is because I get to touch people on a daily basis and help them become who they are, help them find themselves.
And so, yeah, I'm one of those people like...
And sometimes it's just through a basic body...
Well, yeah, I mean...
Excuse me?
Some things are more... more complicated, like you're talking about a tattoo that takes 10 hours to do or something. And some of the piercings I've seen take quite a while to do, too.
Yes, yes. You know, I mean, basic body piercings can be hurried, but I prefer not to. I try and take at least 20 to 30 minutes with a customer. I try to build a relationship and kind of grab their attention. I try and literally become their friend, teach them a bit about who I am. And give them a place to come to when they need to talk to somebody, for them to come into a place where they can truly be themselves and talk to me about anything and everything and not worry about what I'm going to think about them. Because I don't judge, and the cover of my book shows that I'm not going to judge you.
Yeah. I have several piercings in my ears. That's it. And then what was it? A year and a half ago, I got a tattoo. My cousin actually is a tattoo artist and has a tattoo shop in Illinois. And his place is like that. It's just that very comfortable kind of thing where people will take time with you. And you never feel rushed. They'll explain what's going on. And
right.
I think that, you know, especially if this is like your first adventure into this, you need that. It's something you want, but you want some reassurance. And so, you know, the only, as far as suspension, besides what I saw at the festival, I mean, growing up, you know, we learned about Native Americans and the Sundance kind
right.
of thing. And, you know, that was always like, oh, it just made my body do something. But I have to say that the suspension I saw was ropes. It was not piercings. But you do it with the piercings. And go ahead.
Yeah, typically it's done with a piercing.
Yeah. And
sometimes you'll get some rituals that you'll find that are very obscure, that are very old school.
And so you and people come to you with something in mind sometimes that they want. I mean, they don't just come and say, hey, preacher, Rev Dan, can you do, you know, this and this and this? But they don't always just say, well, do what you will. So that they have something in mind. They have a purpose. They have some kind of it's actually a high. And they
right, there's a vision that they're trying to find.
Yes.
I ideally think that every person in the suspension community, and some do for sporting and some do for spiritual reasons,
mm-hmm.
but we all do it to disconnect with the world and connect with ourselves and with the world around us. It forces you to meditate and find your true self and really understand that you're connected to everything, you know?
Yeah. Well, now... Let me ask you, we've had a lot, and this has been going on for quite a while, young people who cut themselves. Do you think that if they were, if things were more open, they would find you and people in your community, and so they wouldn't be harming themselves the way they do in secret?
That's very true, and that's kind of my mission right now, is to try and get myself out there so that people know that I'm here for them.
Yes.
And then I understand, and to help them understand the feelings that they're having, and understand that they're not bad feelings. They're feelings that are that they don't quite understand, or they don't know where it's coming from, and that's just because they don't really understand the human mind. They don't understand that there's so much memory. We've got 6 billion years of memory stored up in our minds. You know,
yeah.
it's a lot of memories to sort through, and we don't use enough of our brain to really understand things. And I feel enlightenment for people to try and disconnect from the economy, to disconnect from society and really, really meditate. A lot of people can meditate, and some are really good at it, and some really just have a difficult time with it.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that kind of puts them in a situation where they have to accept it and really quit, you know?
Yeah, you have to pull, when you're in pain, you have to pull from the very depths of you to handle it.
To overcome it. And once you do it for a long enough time, then the drugs that your mind have to offer, the dopamine, the endorphins, and all that stuff kicks in, and it kind of becomes bliss. It becomes something that's very comfortable, and it's a true vacation. You can go on vacation and leave your state or leave your country, cross an ocean, and I don't care where you go, other than going to like some jungle to disconnect or something like that, you're still going to worry about your life, about your kids, your house, your job, just the things in your normal life. Body suspension forces you to let all those things go. It allows you to have a vacation in town, a way to let go of all your thoughts and all your worries for sometimes maybe 5 or 10 minutes, sometimes maybe a couple hours, depending on the individual.
Mm-hmm.
But when they come down from it, they feel relaxed. They feel refreshed. They've been able to hit that reset button without having to imbibe alcohol or participate in drug use or anything. You know, it can help a lot of people. It can help people with post-traumatic stress disorder, people who can't let go of things, you know, soldiers that have been through traumatic experiences and need some way to vent, to let these things go, to literally just let go of them and find themselves, their true selves, and know that they're not these murdering people that they were forced to go and be, you know, to just offer artistic outlets for people to truly find themselves and to, you know, you can meditate, and it sometimes takes people years to get to a point where they actually really meditate. And some people pick it up extremely early in life.
Mm-hmm.
But some people just need that kick in the butt, or they need that something that says that they've made a decision to do this, and they go through with it. And it's something that no doubt you're going to have to find yourself. It forces them to have to dig deep,
right,
versus avoid it, whether they're going to therapy or they're on therapeutic drugs or whatever. That they can't seem to find. This forces you to search yourself.
Right. Because, well, like when you're talking about taking a vacation, like a mini vacation, whatever, wherever you are, and other people, you mentioned, you know, going across the ocean, going here and going there. It goes back to that, wherever you go, there you are. It's like you take yourself with you.
Right.
But you're talking about totally getting out of yourself and then coming back refreshed.
Mm. Yes, yes.
So the piercing, now, I know I've seen pictures, like at my cousin's shop, of beautiful designs and, you know, that corset effect, things like that.
Right.
Do you do much of that? I mean, what kind of piercing is...
I do play piercings, that's what they would be called, and there's lots of different styles, and that's another way of being able to kind of let go of things and focus on something. Similar to getting a tattoo or a piercing, except you're getting several piercings, and it's similar to a tattoo. I would take a design and plot it out on tracing paper, and then plot it out in dots and push from dot to dot and push the needles in to form a design.
Okay.
And it's going to be just for purely video, and even a corset would be the same type of deal, where you plot out mathematical dots and push the needles and insert jewelry and then add rope to or lace to make it attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's offering these people that outlet that they need, that release that they need, and a lot of people just relate to the pain and use it to get to them their true selves. And sometimes it's just a simple design that may help them to progress to something else. And that's how I started. I just started discovering things. As I was doing things, I discovered more things and studied people such as Fakir Musafir, who started corseting and hanging weights off of his body and just pushing his mind and body to limits. And I kind of just fell into this on my own. I didn't really seek it out. It's something that just kind of happened to me. And I've just taken it to the limit. I know that this is something that I'm very passionate about, and I'm not willing to stop until, I mean, till ever, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep doing this, keep enlightening people and keep helping the people. And it's grown so much in 20 years.
Well, the there's so many things that you had told me before that you don't do. You don't do the split lips, the split tongue, the split penis, these kind of things.
Well, I have done a sub-incision, and I have done a few different types of modifications, and I do small microdermal implants. I don't split tongues. I've done scarification and branding and small things such as that, so I've participated in it, okay, performed it, but I'm not as heavy into it as people like Steve Hayward, people around the country who really, really have an understanding of human anatomy and helping people push limits. But I do refer people to people that I would recommend for them to go have these crazy things done. But I stick to modifying teenagers and opening people up to the lifestyle versus helping people that are on the other end of the spectrum that are heavily modified. I'm here to enlighten the kids of my community.
Okay, that makes sense, because there's degrees, and what
exactly
we're talking about these splits. I mean, for me, and I could be wrong, but for me the most extreme modification would be the split penis, and then cutting off the penis.
Yeah, people that have become eunuchs, it's kind of a fountain of youth that they've found. When you remove testosterone from the body, that you'll live longer. Think clearer. You become more of a peaceful person. You become
okay,
completely asexual, you know?
All right. So, I mean, you know, when you say it like that, it's like, okay, I can get that. Not that I would ever want, you know. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, the first time a man came to me and said, can you split my dick in half so I don't ejaculate in my lover's mouth, I was like, wow, whoa, that's crazy. But at the same time, especially at this time in history, there weren't a whole lot of people that did it. This was a person who really needed this outlet. He saw himself as that way. He wanted this, what they call a sub-incision, done. So, I mean, I had a lawyer draw up simple plans that said that we weren't liable for anything that would go wrong, but we would, you know, do our best with the information that we have, the research we've done to make things happen safely, such as just vitamin K and just doing research on our end to make sure things go as properly as possible. And then when the procedure is done, this guy is hugging us and telling us we've made his lifelong dream come true. He feels whole.
Wow.
You know, and nobody would do it for him. He couldn't go to a doctor or a plastic surgeon. There were people that would embarrass him. He was a normal person in the community. He looked like your grandfather, the man that works at the bank.
Wow.
or the hardware store, you know. But he's still somebody who has the need to be modified.
Yeah.
And we all since the dawn of time.
So, no, that I mean, I think that's wonderful. And, yes, you do have to cover yourselves legally. I mean, that's just, yeah, a fact. You did mention scarification, and a friend of mine from the islands years ago had the most beautiful design on his arms. Because he was black, it showed up more.
Right, correct.
And, you know, at that time, actually, I did, and that was way before the tattoo and everything, but it was like, I kept looking at my arms and thinking, okay, And then it's like, well, it's not going to show on me. And, I mean, I didn't want to have it as extensive as him, but I did really think, because it was beautiful. But,
right.
So some people are better suited for some kinds of this artwork. I
guess, but I think that's just state of mind. I don't think it really matters. Of course, you know, where you come from is going to reflect on how well that the brandings or the scarification come out, just because of skin tone and the fact that darker skinned people tend to scar heavier, and things tend to come out just a lot more beautiful. I have seen white people come out with beautiful designs as well. It's just proper education, teaching people how to care for things so that these things show up the best. And even on the best designs, they kind of fade, but the experience was still there. The enlightenment still happened.
Exactly. The some of the things that seem not so well, the implants. Now, have you ever helped or known people who had the implants and then had them taken out, removed?
Yes, most of them. Most of them.
Do they?
That aren't really heavily into it. People that I know that work, that travel with freak shows and do suspension as well. So over a period of time, you know, health goes up and down. The way you live your lifestyle predicts how long these piercings will last. Mm. Just your lifestyle alone, just eating habits and everything you do in life contributes to how long things will last. And they go into this knowing that there's a chance that they're going to have to come out. And typically they do, and it's not a big deal. They come out and they move on with their life, or they come out and they replace with new jewelry and start over again.
Okay, so that's not a big deal. And I would say that these implants are not the kind of thing we're not talking about, like breast implants. We're talking about different implants on the hands, on the face. And I don't know, what are they made out of?
Silicone, typically.
Okay.
It's just a very high grade of silicone.
Yeah. Well, there's something that I found interesting, because I did check this out a little bit. The saline injections for what's called bagel head.
Not just foreheads, but there's even extreme cases where people are using saline injections for their genitalia as well to increase sensitivity. And for just aesthetic looks as well.
Okay. Now, eventually, though, that dissipates.
Yeah, it's just saline, so it just dissipates in your body.
So that's interesting. I have seen people who've had the ear pointing done.
Right. That's getting really big, especially with a lot of the younger females these days are really interested in getting these ears done, and that's why I feel people like me need to be out there to enlighten people, to talk to these people out in the clubs and the bars and stuff where these kids are hanging out and they're contemplating these things. And a lot of people will try and perform these things on their own if they cannot find a professional.
Oh my goodness. I mean,
yeah, that's the main thing that parents need to understand with these kids that come in with their issues in these tattoo shops that crave these piercings and these tattoos and the body suspension and everything, that if we don't allow them to do this, if we don't find this creative outlet for our kids, that they're going to do it any way they can. They will find things in the garage, in the backyard to make things happen. And I was one of those people until I became involved with SUSCON and the International Suspension Alliance. And they made me realize, hey, that your actions have repercussions. And when you put your stuff on the internet for people to look at, they're going to emulate you. You need to do things as safe and proper as you possibly can, so that when somebody gets into a situation where they hurt themselves, that you're not responsible. That you tried to portray yourself as cleanly, as safely, as sterile, and thinking about the individual as much as possible to keep them safe, you know?
Yes. No, I think that's a very good point, because people are going to do these things to themselves or to their best buddy or whatever, and they don't have a clue. So what
right.
you're offering?
Well, they've got YouTube. They've got YouTube. So.
Well, okay. However, they need more than that. I mean, what you're offering is real support, real knowledge.
Not just support, but guidance and education and allowing them to know that there are ways to do this creatively and safely as well.
Yeah. That's another thing that we see, frequently, is not as drastic. Well, in a way, it's drastic, and I don't know what you call it, with the earplugs. I mean, with the, like, the plugs in the lobes to stretch them.
Uh-huh. Ear stretching?
Yeah. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful work. I mean, as far as, you know, the it just looks, I don't know what, but with the you know, different kinds of jewelry in those holes.
Yes.
But then I've seen the people without them, and that was sort of off-putting me. I mean, it was just like, oh, goodness, I think they should wear them all the time, you know, because.
Right. Well, believe me, when somebody forgets to put their jewelry in, it's like they walk walked out of the house with their underwear on. They feel naked when they realize they left the house without it.
Yeah, and then they're getting all those strange looks because, it just looks so strange to see the, because, of course, it's all stretched out and there's a hole and it just looks strange. But that, I think, is just one of the beautiful, beautiful,
It's probably my favorite modification that I've had done because it allows me to wear a variety of jewelry versus metal versus organic to provide a certain look or just to accessorize with clothes or whatever as well, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I can see that. Now, I did see a picture, and I just didn't understand this one, but the nostrils had been enlarged somehow.
Right.
And now that surprised me. I mean, I guess nothing should, but that did because I just had never seen or heard about that before. Is that very common?
It is nowadays, and mostly in the suspension and the heavy modification world. It's a way for us to set ourselves even apart from the rest of the modification community to show that we've gone that much farther and we're that much more dedicated and that we're not mainstream. We push limits and we are who we are. You know, we all have this idea of what we're supposed to look like. And it's strange. And like I said, we have like 6 billion years of memories to sort through in our brains. And I feel that we kind of reflect different lives that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
We find bits and pieces that work for us. We're like a world of humans that have had an amnesia. We've lost all of our memories, and we have to try and find them again. And that's really what I think body suspension is doing for me. It's helping me find that ultimate experience of knowing what God is, and to me, knowing what God is and how it feels, that warm, accepting feeling.
Well, let me ask you because I'm very big. I mean, I accept reincarnation and have for the greater part of my life. When you are in this state, when you're suspended, do you ever have flashes of other lifetimes?
I honestly feel that I do. When I do suspension, I can almost feel like I've recalled suspensions that I've done in my past. Like I've not done it, but like a deja vu kind of thing almost.
Yes.
Just instances where you feel like I've done this before.
Right, that feeling. Yeah. Because that's one of the things that happens with meditation. Sometimes, I mean, you go to past lives or pieces of them float back to you. So... it sounds like suspension is heavy, heavy meditation to me.
Yes. I firmly believe that it all starts with consciousness. It all starts with consciousness. And you know, what is the good in you? And trying to use parts of your brain that our government and the establishment has tried to stop from working, to stop our pineal gland from doing what it's supposed to do, filling us full of fluoride and keeping us from using that part of our brain and forcing our community to have to use psychedelic drugs such as LSD and mushrooms and MDMA and things to get that part of their brain working again and see things clearer.
Right. So I mean, to me, that this makes more sense that this is something that you actually have control over, whereas sometimes the self-administered drugs, you don't always have that much control over. So
exactly. Yeah, you do. It's like getting on an airplane. You take LSD, it's like getting on an airplane, the door shuts. Just enjoy the ride. You know, you're in it. And I'll tell you when you're done, you'll just come down. But with suspension, it's definitely controlled into limits, and it allows somebody to build up, to work up to something that maybe they're not quite ready for. And it's a learning experience. You're learning how to use your mind. You're learning how to let those parts of your mind work that you don't normally use. I actually have a few team members that are in college right now, and they're studying psychology, and they're using body suspension as a way to test the theories that they're being taught. They're in the middle of experimenting with dopamines and endorphins and learning how to control the mind. All these things that they're learning in school, they're putting to test. so that they can help their patients in the future deal with the issues that they have.
That's wonderful. You mentioned young people in college, and I wanted to mention, because I think this is fascinating, we know a lot of parents want their children to go in their, you know, in their footsteps, or maybe they don't push it or anything, but it sort of excites them when their child decides to do what they're doing. And you have three sons, two of which are working with you now, right?
Yes. I've raised my kids to think for themselves, to know that they are in control of their lives, and at the same time, they're not in control of their lives, and they have to allow things to happen. I've never forced any type of culture on my children. I've just kind of lived my life and done my thing, and they just kind of ended up awakening as well. I never had to preach anything or say, this is the way you need to be. This is just the way they became, because they emulated me.
Yeah.
And I never shoved anything down their throat. They were personal choices. I never said, do this, and you got to play this sport, and you're going to be this person. This is what you're going to do in school. I've allowed my kids to just be who they are. And they've become successful kids, you know. They've got friends who were controlled in life, grounded for doing this or doing that, and got in trouble for doing this or doing that. And I just kind of accepted it and just allowed it to be either one of their experiences. And never, I mean, not to say I didn't discipline them when they needed it, but I allowed them to make their own decisions in life. I never said, this is what you're going to do. I've always said, you can do this or you can do that. You know, the repercussions are up to you. You're going to make the decision, not me.
Right. And
when your kids coming to you and saying, Dad, why can't you just make this decision for me? Why it would be so much easier if you just made it for me. Well, son, I can't make those decisions for you. I've prepared my kids for a tough world that we live in. And the more we shelter our kids, the more we set them up for failure.
Yeah, for confusion and failure,
you have an easier time raising your kids to do what you do for a living if you just do you and be you and allow them to see who you are. They will become that person if it's meant to be.
Right. Well, they have the choice, so they will become themselves because you've encouraged them to be themselves instead of fit some other mold. So I think that's just excellent, and I think that probably, but maybe because you've been doing this for 20 years or over 20 years and the kids, but I think that this might be sort of a rarity, father and sons doing this together in this community. Am I right or wrong?
Maybe in this day and age, but trying to set yourself back 100 years.
Yes, yes.
And what people were doing, and not just in a Native American community, but in India or any of those countries over there where they do suspension and do odd things. You look at tribes from any jungle, from any continent, and they're all doing similar things without never even knowing each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This isn't something that we're taught. This is something that is a part of us as humans to push these limits.
I agree with that. I mean, because people have been doing different things through the years, just like we know that people have been tattooing since the beginning. So it would only make sense that they've been doing other things that we may not have so much evidence of, but they have. I wanted to ask you about something that really it shook me up when I first found out about this, I don't know, a couple years ago maybe, and that was the corneal tattoos. The actual iris of the eye is tattooed or is colored.
Oh, yeah, they dye it. They do like an injection.
Yes, yes.
It dyes the eyeball.
And now, I know that for a while it was not legal in this country. Is it now?
I'm not sure on the legality, but that would depend on state to state.
Okay.
And from practitioner to practitioner, but I can tell you this. It is happening in America, and if they have to do it behind closed doors,
while they're not in business
hours,
going to do it. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And you're always going to find that modification artist who's willing to push the limit, who's not afraid. He knows his anatomy. He knows the human body, and he knows this person who wants this modification done as well, and knows that they're willing to take the risk. So they take the risk together, and it's something that's fairly safe to do nowadays. You know, it's maybe not being a huge amount of people, but it's done enough to where you can find somebody who's really good at doing it and
oh, okay.
Have things when they're extremely beautiful.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, because that's reassuring. Also, they're doing implants in the eye. Just little pieces of metal?
Teeth. I've seen teeth being done. I mean, if you can find a way to get it done, they'll do it. There's people out there that really just want to set themselves apart from the people who even set themselves apart, you know? They're wanting to go that extra level to say, I'm going to push this limit. And it's for completely personal reasons, you know? I don't think it has anything to do with fashion or fad. It just has to do with them ideally becoming who they are.
Yeah. Well, now you did mention, like, people who travel and maybe in freak shows and all, they may do some things because of their business. I mean, they may be the ones who do some of the different things, like, old fangs and things like that that are implanted that can be changed, that can be taken out, can be moved.
Oh, yeah, totally. Some of them want permanent type of decorations, and some want to change from one thing to the other.
Yeah.
And you got some people who are literally changing themselves because they feel that there's one gentleman who feels he is a tiger. That's who he is. And he's willing to do everything in his power to make sure that he feels as comfortable with his soul as he can.
Wow. I bet he has beautiful tattoos then, too.
Oh, yeah. He's cleft lip and his face has been tattooed. He's got, you know, whiskers in his in his face and in forehead and extensive stuff done. And you have to think this isn't done in someone's back shed somewhere. This is done in a very clinical setting. This is somebody who knows what they're doing, and they're doing what I'm doing on a more extreme level. They're helping people find themselves and giving them those outlets to really be who they feel they are.
Right. In a very safe way. Because I'm sure that just like when you get a tat, you're told about, you know, putting something on it or not. I mean, it doesn't seem like such a thing. I mean, they used to whatever, and I forget what Donnie told me to get and just put on. But, I mean, you know, it was all good. But you're getting the care. They tell you how to take care of things because they don't want you to get infected either or anything. And like you said, very clinical and safe. So
yes, well, they're putting their name on this as well. They're putting their name on this person, and they understand, like I said earlier, that they are touching this person. This person is taking them with them everywhere and introducing you to their friends as my new friend who did this for me, who made me who I am.
Exactly.
So they're not willing to do something that's half-assed and something that's just not done properly because they feel pride in what they do, being able to offer this stuff to their community.
Yeah, well, I mean, talk about art. This is real art, and I know that people do different. You did mention branding, and I was aware of that. It's been a couple years ago now that three activists in Israel, vegans, were branded with the number 269. That they were. It was sort of like a performance piece to make a point. About a calf, and after that, you know, they got really badly burned, and but they were saying, don't do this, you know, have the tat, don't do branding. Well, I was one of the people that got the tat, and but another person I know on YouTube, Emily, the bite-sized vegan, she shortly after that, because she is an artist, and she did a performance piece too, where she was branded, and it hurt her, of course. I mean, it's, you know, hot metal. But she has a lot of tattoos, and I think...
Yeah, it's painful.
So it wasn't quite... I mean, the more you have done, does it get to a point where, I mean, immediately, like, the pain isn't what it was or what it would have been if you hadn't had anything done?
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody. Everybody kind of has their own state of mind when they go through these experiences. And it depends on lifestyle, what you ate that day, how much water you drink in your life, how resistant you are.
Okay, I was going to ask about that because I think that that must play a big part, particularly in suspension. So what do you do? Like if you're going to be suspended for, 45 minutes, an hour, how long is the longest that you've been suspended?
I've been up for 4 hours is the longest suspension that I've done.
Okay, that seems quite
that was wild. That was from a 4-point suspension in my back. It's called a suicide suspension, and it's probably the easiest suspension to do, that you're able to do the longest. It tends to be the most comfortable way to do things. And you've got suspensions that are a lot more intense. You move to the chest and abdomen region, and it's very sensitive, and you really, really have to come to terms with things. And people that do long duration suspension in those intense situations are very skilled people. They know themselves very well, and it's a progression. You start off slow, and you work yourself to a point where you get as creative as you can. You want to try different things and push limits.
Yeah,
and we all do it in our own ways.
Well. Know? Let me ask you then, for your 4 hour, or what did you, our body gets to a point where it just releases everything, and I've seen runners with in marathons where they come in and they've like soiled themselves and all of this. Does anything like that happen, or do you like stop eating and
not drinking?
Go ahead.
Not from my experience, typically somebody will come down before things get too extreme. You got the extreme person who will just ride it out and will pass out, or people that just say, I can't take it anymore. They get ill, they get nauseous, and it's time to come down.
Yeah.
Everybody has their own tolerance levels. Again, it's state of mind, the kind of day they're having, the kind of week they had, and then what they're trying to achieve, because some people are trying to achieve things such as getting clean off of drugs. I've seen suspension help people that are addicted to drugs, and they use the suspension as a way to have that disconnection without using foreign substances. So they're going to stay up for extended amounts of time to push the limit. And some people want to have those out-of-body experiences, whether you're a drug addict or you're somebody who's suffering from cancer. There are stories of people who had extreme cancer issues and were going to die and did suspension and were able to really find themselves and be more comfortable with their passing because they were able to see across over into where they were going and see the beauty of it and just be able to just become comfortable with it and just let things happen. So it's really a way for people to overcome their fears in a lot of different ways in life.
Well, so if you're going to, say, just do a fairly easy suspension, but you just want to do this for whatever reason, are you going to not eat the day before, or?
Different people have different outlooks. I've gone both ways. I've fasted and I've eaten.
Okay.
I myself prefer to have nourishment in my system. Typically, I like to have it digested, but just to have the nourishment in my system, maybe a light breakfast, nothing too heavy, just something to kind of nourish myself.
Okay.
Because it's going to feed on your endorphins, dopamine. Your body, it's like a workout. I mean, it's really intense. It would be like a long-distance run, but within a few minutes or 30 minutes or an hour, however long it is, but I just find for myself, I have more endurance and I have a lot more fun if I have something for my endorphins to feed on while I'm up there.
Okay.
So plenty of protein, plenty of water, being healthy. I don't recommend any drugs or alcohol during suspension. We do all sober suspension. There's no way I will allow anybody. If anybody is inebriated in a suspension meetings, they will be made to leave. I only allow positive energy, zero negativity. I want people to experience what their mind and bodies have to offer. I want people to connect. So people that are at these suspensions, I want the energy to flow. I want people, and when you become really good at suspension. You're able to block energy and use crowds. And I like to impress people. I like to freak people out. There's nothing better than to see somebody puke their guts up because they just freaked out on what they saw. At the same time, you got this person that comes up and puts their hand on you and says, I understand. I get it. And I didn't understand until I actually saw what I've seen and felt the energy that was produced while you did this suspension. I'm interested in doing it, and I want to know more about this.
Right. Well, I would think that this kind of performance would also feed on the energy of the crowds, just like a musical performance or a speaker or whatever.
Yeah. Totally, and for me, it's more like a circus. when I work at Ringmaster, and when I was in my heyday, when I had a large team, and I was running 12 and 15 people, and suspending 2 and 3 people at a time, I became a ringmaster. And as focused as I was, and interactive as I was with the crowd, I didn't really realize for a long time what I did to those people. And people have stopped and told me, you know, just watching you as a ringmaster, just insert the hooks and put people up, and to feel your energy that you put in to your suspendees and your crowd is amazing.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that. Well, now, you're in Tennessee, and you said earlier you were a West Coast boy. So, you know, we think of some of the southern states sometimes as being, I'll just use the word backward, but I that's not a good word, but maybe not as whatever, as some of the northern states. Have you found that in Tennessee?
It's definitely been a peculiar place for me to
okay.
to do my craft, because I live on the buckle of the Bible Belt. So I deal with the brunt of the Baptists and just the Christian community as a whole. They see us as demons. I've been labeled cult leader, you know, you name it. And the main thing is I just see it as people who don't understand, who don't want to understand, and they hate the fact that I have made connections with somebody that they never could make the connection with. And sorry, I'm the one who made the connection. I'm the one who connected the dots for this person, and they found themselves. Don't judge me. I'm here for them to find me.
Right, but you make yourself very available. How do you do that? Now, I know that you currently don't have a website, but in the hopefully near future, you will. And
I definitely want to.
Yeah. Well, and you do have the Facebook page called Full Circle Suspension 3.
Correct.
And what? But in the like in your locale in Tennessee, what do you do to advertise, for want of a better word? What do you do to put yourself up?
For me, it's pretty much, I market myself through my Facebook, of course. Also through FetLife, which is a fetish community worldwide.
Right.
As well as just going out into the masses. In this area, I'm known as the only piercer really who is out there, who's going out to the clubs and going out to the bars and talking with college kids and people in the service or whoever it is that need this guidance, who look for this help. And I guess they're somewhat drawn to me, but little by little, as people really, as they see my Facebook and it literally says Reverend, they're understanding by looking at the pictures of me and what I do that I'm this non-judgmental person who's not going to judge them whether they're Christian or not, just going to accept them for who they are and help them.
Okay. What do you see happening with yourself and your sons, your business, your endeavors, say in 5 years, Dan?
I really hope to have a spiritual clinic available, and I don't know if Tennessee is the right place for it. I'm kind of thinking about Colorado, something where people are a little more spiritually inclined, and to actually kind of offer a spiritual clinic that can not only offer body suspension, but a dispensary as a caretaker, as well as just helping people through different journeys, doing retreats, going out camping.
Okay, but you're talking about
like-minded people.
But you're talking about like a brick and mortar, like a building, and then going from there, right?
Yes, totally.
So, yeah, Colorado probably would be more, definitely more open than Tennessee, yeah. I think.
At the same time, I kind of like the fact that I may this be this burden on the Christian and religious community, that they don't want me pushing these ideas into their community, and I'm here to let them know that I'm here for them. And, you know,
right.
I would love nothing more than to have a facility where I actually met on a weekly basis. And I try to, when I have enough team members, I try to meet on a weekly basis. And we call it church. It's just a time for us to meet and talk and do what we do. But to actually have a place for me to hold talks, to talk about things such as you and I are talking about now,
yeah.
and having specific subjects to focus on weekly, and to be able to go out to churches and sit down and listen to a sermon from a preacher and then walk around and hand out my card and say, here I am. This is my church. Why don't you come listen to me and what I have to say?
Right. So,
and then watch and see how many members can actually, from that church what that I've touched, actually come to me and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah.
Because there may be things that even in people in organized churches that have things to talk about and to counsel with, there's no way they could talk to a pastor or even a spouse or a family member about who they really are.
Exactly, which is very sad because it uses so much energy when we're hiding something like that about who we really are. Whether it's if you're of a certain religion and is looked down upon, whatever, you think you would be fired, or if it's a sexual...
right, or you're gay, or you're polyamorous, or something that just doesn't go along with society, that they don't understand, that we've decided that marriage isn't something we see as an institution that's going to work for us. It's a legal document, and we feel that love is finite, and we're better represented with having that other person in our life to support each other.
Yeah. Well, in fact, didn't we find each other in a poly group? I think.
I believe so.
I think so. Yeah. But that's true. But you know, I found just like I was never in the closet about being a pagan. I mean, as soon as I actually had a word for what I was, I was out there, and I've done that because I've seen people who do try to, for the reasons we talked about, hide who they are, and it's just so debilitating. So I do suggest that if people can at all, they come out of whatever closet they're in.
And people don't understand it, and as much as you try to explain it, it's been so imprinted in them from generation to generation that all they know and all they're willing to accept because they've told this is the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just trying to figure out for themselves what they really feel and what a real relationship is to them. And people are like, how can you do that? So you're going to let your girl go and have sex with some other man? I'm like, that's not that kind of situation. I'm typically in a relationship with a woman who's bisexual and seeks, friendship and intimacy with man and woman. And we all bounce off each other and we're not.
Well, ownership. When you're into poly, we actually understand nobody owns anyone else. And I see that so much with my married friends. I mean, they're just, he's mine or she's mine and she's going to do what I say or she's not going to do this and blah, blah, blah. And actually, polyamorous are the best communicators around, I think, because they have to be.
Right. But at the same time, they see the BDSM world as something that's just atrocious versus being something that's the most loving, trusting, open and honest relationship
very
you ever have.
I have been so surprised because I was sort of leery about that kind of thing until I really had it explained by my brother again about the safeness. And like you were talking earlier about people who are high on drugs or alcohol or something, you're not about to suspend them, and they're not about to suspend anyone else. And it's that way with the BDSM, at least the ones I know, because now I know, quite a few people involved in this. And it's a very safe atmosphere. I think people don't understand
safe,
that.
Supportive.
Very supportive, very trusting. I mean, and because people have earned the trust. I mean, you're not going to just let somebody who doesn't know what they're doing do some of these things to you. Because I've known people like that, too, who showed up with, just bloody, bloody bodies because they wanted to be whipped in somebody. And then they get infected, whatever, because it wasn't...
Oh, yeah.
done
I've
right.
I've seen the suspension community as well. You know, I've literally, I got out of the community and got out of body piercing because my first trade is a chef. I'm a 5-star chef. I've worked in some of the best restaurants, and I just found body piercing and people as my passion, so I kind of moved into that world. Forgot where I was going with that. I'm sorry.
But you were just talking about being a chef, and then, but you got in. I don't know how much you're into BDSM, but and because some people will maybe do suspensions, they would not have a tattoo. And I mean, there's so much crossover, but it's not automatic.
No, it's something I think we acquire through time and through experience.
Mm-hmm.
And through meeting like-minded people or showing up at some type of convention where something like this is going on and you have this enlightenment. And if you don't put yourself out there and you don't search, and you'll not find anyone.
Exactly.
But, you know, nowadays with the internet, that's really not an issue.
Yeah.
If you're passionate about something, you will find somebody who's just as passionate about what you do in life. That's why I feel we should all do what we want to do in life. If you feel you're an author and you need to write books, then that's what you need to do because the money will come.
Yes. You will starve to death. Follow your bliss. This is Joseph Campbell said this years ago, and it's true. And you will. You'll find some way to get that food. But I feel bad for the people who are pretty much the drones who work at jobs they hate to be able to make money to buy things that they think they need to keep up with the people across the street, but yet they have no time to use it. You know, that kind of thing. It just seems so sad.
Yep.
So what you're doing,
not living to work.
Yeah.
No.
You're helping people find really who they are and know that it's okay to be who they are. So, I mean, What a goal, what a mission. I think it's just fantastic, though. And you deal with people around the world because they have found you or somebody's referred them to you on Facebook. And so, I mean, you know what's going on in this kind of community around the world. I think that's fascinating. So what would you have to say? We've got 2 minutes. What kind of words of wisdom? Richard Mann, do you have? Yeah.
You know, I guess the main thing is that I try and teach is to just be yourself.
Okay.
And for people to stop making so many decisions and just follow through with life, follow the flow and do what comes to you. Stop making so many decisions. And we all know who we are. It's a matter of waking up and accepting who we are and not letting anyone persecute us for who we are. And literally, you know, I just want people to know that I am there for them. If they have some reason or something to talk about, or they have some experience that they need to fulfill and they don't seem to have the courage to do it, then I'm there to try and help them see that they do have it, that they do have all they need to do what they want to do in life.
Yeah. I think that what you're doing with you help someone empower themselves to do something, and that empowerment stays with them in all other areas of their life, really. Because
yes,
when they do something, I mean, that's the whole thing about, like wilderness camps and things, you know, you're stretched. But once you succeed at that, once you do that, hey, your whole life has changed. And it's, I mean, there's more of a change actually on the inner level than the outer level that we all see. Am I right on that?
You're very correct.
Yeah. I just think this is fascinating. And Dan, I hope that you'll come back because you have so much to share. So Dan can be found at Full Circle Suspension 3 on Facebook. And I keep pushing it. Hopefully it won't be long till there'll be a website.
Yes. Thank you for your support. Thank you for having me on the show. It was an honor to be able to not only help you out, but to enlighten listeners that showed up to listen tonight.
Thank
and I appreciate them for listening.
Well, thank you, because you've cleared up a lot of the mystique in things, and you've made it sound very, I was going to say normal, which it is. I mean, as far as people finding themselves, and we're not all the same, thank goodness. And so this is one area. So the next time that our listeners, you know, see somebody who has something done like that, you know, maybe just walk up and tell them you appreciate what they're going through. I mean, you know, you beauty comes in all forms. And I think that body modification is beautiful. So
yeah, it's the fact that they have the courage to, yes, to literally be who they are on a daily basis, yes, whether or not somebody agrees with them or not, they're going to be who,
exactly,
they are.
People don't have to say, well, I would never do that. It's like, well, that's fine. Nobody's trying to get you to. But you can appreciate that somebody else wanted to and did. So.
Right. Well, and ultimately understand that we are all one. So
exactly.
We are all extensions of each other. So we all balance each other out, and we all do different things to conglomerate what we've made here in this world.
Right.
And I feel as long as we keep pushing it, every arm movement that's repeated from person to person affects everything around us. It's like the butterfly wings that change everything. You know, we all make the world what it is. And when we all have this realization and we all realize that there are different things we need to think about in this world, that culture on Earth will change for the better. Change is coming. It is inevitable. There's no way around it. Everything ends and then restarts itself.
It does. That's the way of the universe, of the multiverse. So, again, thank you so, so much.
Thank you. I look forward to talking with you guys again.
Me too. Daniel James Sampfly. Yes.